This week's episode of The Unwind is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to thecommentist.com and clicking on the banner.
How do you say it?
Grimroar.
Grimroar.
Roar. That's how I say it. How do you, say it?
You have to do this. Grimroar.
Like a kitty cat.
That's how I roar, guys.
Meow.
What is cat in the house. What up, nerds? Welcome to episode 53 of The Unwind, a weekly show where we talk about tech, games, gadgets, and geek culture. My name is Rob Steller.
I'm Sean Thomas.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
And today, we're going to talk about Tony Stark.
Nice.
The Tony Stark himself.
Yeah. Nice.
So, we're going to get right into our first topic where I want to talk about a little company called Tesla.
Mm.
So, Tesla, the other day, unleashed their newest electric car.
It's actually
an SUV.
A spaceship.
Yeah, it is. It's going to the moon. He's combining all his projects. Yeah, SpaceX and PayPal, you have to pay to get
it. He's got the train, too.
It's going
to
be a Hyperloop to the moon.
Oh, yeah, Hyperloop. Yeah. Yeah, it's an elevator spaceship.
That's the end goal. I don't know if you realize this. Yeah. It's just a quick shot to the moon and back.
Yeah. I can't wait till we see some vertical integration. Or is it horizontal? We don't know what they're thinking. So they put out the Model X, which is their electric SUV. It's right in my budget. It's $130,000. That's about how much I was thinking of spending.
Nice.
So I was a little afraid it'd be $150,000, which is right out.
What are you driving right now?
Hyundai Elantra.
That's about right. You could probably get it like half that. Right?
But it also has a time machine in the back. That's why it's $130,000.
Yeah.
Apparently time machines are only like $100,000. But
it's a fantastic world we live in, Sean.
So obviously it's very expensive. It can go 250 miles on a charge. The thing, since it's electric, there is literally
how long does
no
it take to charge?
Nice.
Doesn't have fast charging, half an hour?
50%. No, they don't have quick charge.
It's not a Windows phone, is it, Sean?
Is it liquid cold? So that's what actually we're going to do.
Does it have a desktop class public processor?
Next week, we do comparisons between cars and phones.
Well, it's got universal apps.
Mobile computers, right?
So it can go 250 miles on a charge. It's an SUV, so it can carry 7 people. It's pretty big.
That's like what my car gets in a full tank. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's
what? You only can travel 250?
250 to 300.
That doesn't seem right.
Wow. 300, yeah. I have a small
tank. My car can go like 400.
Actually, I only have like a 10-gallon, 11-gallon tank.
My tank is pretty small. I get good gas mileage, but my tank is really small. Yeah.
Got them small tanks compensating for something. You have to compensate. Anyway,
is there a topic here?
There is no topic. So, okay, getting back to it. So Tesla is releasing this car. What I was going to mention is it is ludicrously fast. So any electric car, there's not the lag time that gasoline-powered cars
get
have.
Get out the way. Get
and
out.
So it can actually accelerate just as fast as a Porsche Turbo. And this is an SUV.
What?
Yeah.
Because it's so literally when electric you hit the motors. Gas, it goes. Second. Yeah. And not
when
to
you
mention
hit
it
the
just accelerates.
Accelerator.
Yeah.
Not the gas.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
When you hit the electric.
That's true. So it's ridiculously fast. It is absurdly engineered. I mean that in the most positive of ways. There's so many cool things about it. Maybe I'll just go straight into it. It has gull wings.
That's awesome. I'd need that in my car.
This gets into, it's probably over-engineered. I don't know if it needed gull wings, but it does. So basically their idea, we should mention, so they're not like the DeLorean wings where they go straight out. They kind of go up and out a little bit. And their argument was two things. I think you can fit it in tighter spaces, like you can open the door, which is true. If you're sandwiched between two cars, the doors basically open straight up almost. So you can fit it and open it up. And the other thing, which I agree with, you can get stuff in easier. And it's an SUV, so you're probably going to be putting stuff in there. Taking the seats out is easier because there's literally no door in your way.
Does any SUV have gull wings?
No. I mean, how many cars have gull wings? It's totally an absurd thing.
That's crazy.
Now, both of these, both the front door is not a gull wing. The front door is a normal door. But both of them are controlled and they have some system. I don't know exactly how it works, but basically when you have the key, when you walk near it, it will sense you and automatically open it. I don't know how it works exactly though, because obviously, you know, if you're just driving by yourself, you wanted to open up the front door, not the gull wing doors. So I don't know how it figures that out, but there is something that it does, and it, so, because one problem is it takes, I believe, 7 seconds or something like that for the doors to open, which,
what,
you know, when you're opening doors, that's a long time because it has to go all the way up. So this automatic thing helps it. Now, with the front door, you can also open it normally. I don't actually know how it works with the gull wing doors, if you can open it normally or you have to let the electric do its thing. But
It accelerates in how fast, and the doors take how long to open?
They can get to 60 before the doors open.
You really can. I think it's 2.5 seconds. Don't quote me on that, but I believe it's 2.5 seconds.
Yeah, I think it's closer to three, but still, it's nuts. You can get to 60 miles per hour before the doors open.
So the other cool thing that they did is the windshield. It's one continuous piece of glass going above you. So basically, there's the front windshield. There's no stop. There's no chassis in your way. It goes all the way back. So a lot of the people who have driven it, I unfortunately have not. We sent many unwind emails to Tesla to see if we get invited. No, but so apparently from people who said that they drove in it, you feel like you're immersed in, like, you really feel like you're on the road. It's a cool experience. It's not VR. Cheesy at all. I don't know how that, I would hope it's, like, really reinforced glass, because obviously there's just more places for it to break.
Well, the interesting thing about that, so, you know, usually you say SUVs, it's a roll hazard, right? Like, that's why they have the roll bar for SUVs. I don't know the strength of the glass, that sort of thing, but there's less chance of this car rolling than this SUV rolling than a regular car, because the battery, most of the weight in an electric car is actually towards the bottom, right? So even though it's raised off the ground, all the weight is distributed to the bottom of the car because that's where the battery is and the electric motor.
That makes sense.
You can also get a $25,000 tax rebate with this car.
Yeah, and that's
pretty crazy.
Thank you, government.
So we're going to get it for the company.
Because we're going to save $25,000 that we don't have.
Right.
So if anyone wants to advertise for $105,000, we have an ad space just for you. Yep. 30 seconds only.
Yep.
So this is an incredible car. I would love to see this.
It looks really nice.
Yeah, it looks nice. I haven't ridden in the Model S either, but it looks like a great car. The thing is, I believe this was slated to come out in like 2012, and it's taken this long. And even then, right now, it's basically only pre-orders. You still will only get it in 2016. A couple people have it, but it's like Sergey Brin. So we're still waiting for it to come out. It's $130,000, which solidly puts it in the high-end luxury market. Like, this is not a regular BMW. This is
not your soccer
stuff.
Mom van.
Yeah. So, the Model S is very expensive as well. So both their cars. Now, they've said before, or Elon has said before, they are building this also in part to make some kind of $30,000 car that's more affordable. But basically, I want to know, what do you guys think about Tesla? Like, with something this expensive, it can't gain mass market appeal at this point. But everybody, I think, likes what they're doing to a degree, but do you see what they're doing? Can they stay as a company as they're doing things?
I think it's interesting. I mean, obviously, one of the big things is that their cars are electric and eco-friendly and all that.
Boogie, woogie, woogie.
Yes. So I think it's interesting because, correct me if I'm wrong, and I don't, you know, I'm not a big car person, but I don't think there was a real, like, high-end electric car, was there, before Tesla?
No,
like a luxury electric car, right?
No. There are some hybrids. There's actually, what manufacturer it is, but because of the better acceleration on electric cars, there is, I forgot what car it is, but it's actually a hybrid. It's still gas, but it's a hybrid supercar, and it accelerates super quickly because they just have the electric engine start out. But yeah, like you said, there's no...
So I think it's interesting because, you know, at least for me, I've always seen... I've always seen like eco-friendly cars as more you know, not of the sports car variety. Like, sure. it's not meant to be a sexy car, right? Yeah. It's meant to be like Prius is the most famous electric car. I've got gas mileage and all this stuff, right? Or better mileage and all this. So I like in that sense what it's trying to do.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, like you said, this is not a car I'm going out to buy, and the majority of people are not going to be able to afford.
Yep. That is their actual model. I don't know how often he talks about it, but Elon has mentioned it before. It's similar to the Apple model, right? So you go in with a high-end product, and you make sure you price it so that it covers your margins, right? So it's paying for the car. This is new technology, so it's going to be expensive off the bat. But they price it obviously higher than that so that they can make money off of it and reinvest that money on things that will eventually get them to be able to make mass market devices. And so those devices will have, but they'll still have a relatively high profit margin because notice he said a $30,000 car, not a $18,000 car.
We're just not at that point yet.
And well, I don't think he's ever planning to be at that point, right? So it's kind of like, well, you don't have to get the MacBook Pro or the Mac Pro. You can get the iMac, or you can get the low-end, or a Mac Mini or something like that. But it's still, like, a Mac Mini is a nice computer, but it's probably overpriced by $150.
Sure.
Right? But people can afford it because it's not $1,000.
I mean,
so that's the model. He's coming out with, he purposely went after the high-end market because by building this mystique around it and this appeal around it, the sex appeal around the car, he knew that people with money would pay for it, and that would subsidize the technology expansion, research, and development. And they've got that huge battery plant. So in 10 years, Tesla is going to be a battery company, not a car company. There'll be a battery company that sells cars.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but their sales are pretty good, aren't they, compared to other luxury model cars?
Basically they sell out of everything.
Yeah, I mean
they have a waiting list on all their cars, basically.
I mean, this is just one
regular luxury car because their cars aren't available everywhere.
So this is one random article, but it says they sold about 12,000 cars in one quarter.
I don't know how that works relative, you can't. It's more how much profit are they making, because you can't compare. You can't go on a regular lot, or it's not as easy to get a Tesla as it is for some other cars. Even though they're more expensive, a lot of people have Lexuses, a lot of people have BMWs. It's not as easy, as far as I know, to get a Tesla. Also because they're more expensive, but
well, they're also expensive. It's it's basic supply and demand, right? So they know that they haven't reached the scale of something like a GM that can, granted they're only producing now three different models of car, but a GM or a Toyota or whatever, they're making thousands of cars off the production line, but it happens to be spread out over several different models. But so with this, with their with these tactics, I mean, they are, I forgot what I was going to say. Move on.
Well, one thing I wanted to say, maybe you can, one thing you pointed out too, just a quick mention. I mean, you can't underestimate how well Elon did at adding the mystique to these vehicles and making them a desirable car. I mean, even as advanced as they are, getting anybody to purchase a $130,000 vehicle is difficult. I mean, there are a lot of luxury cars out there, and this is very much on the high end. I mean, but Tesla is that is the car company everybody looks for, the electric car company. It's incredible the way he's planned out. And from what I hear, they're very good cars. So that also helps out a lot. This is what, if I was really rich, this is what I would want. Especially because also, you can't use a sports car everywhere. But you're getting sports car speeds on an SUV. I can't wait to see when they are able to actually produce a car that is a little more mass market. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll leave the bottom end to the Leaf and a couple other vehicles. But a lot of companies have had mixed success. Like the Volt didn't do very well. The Prius has always done well, but that, gets into hybrids. I think people are okay with hybrids. And one thing that's always been an issue is charging. Tesla has a lot of charging stations, more than they have had before. California is lined with them, but it's still one thing you always have to include with a electric car is range anxiety. There's always that feeling of, am I going to run out of juice? And yep. with gas, you just know you're going to find a gas station. You have no anxiety related to that. But like almost comparable to a phone, you know, once your phone's at 15%, you're like, okay, I guess I should do less stuff because I don't want it to die on yeah. me when I need it. So, but we're getting, 250 miles, you're probably not going to drive more than that in a day. It's still, the problem is it takes time to charge and things like that.
Do you know of any around here?
I don't know, charging stations? I drive by a dealer that sells Tesla, so I assume there's some around here. I haven't really looked though.
Yeah, I've seen Teslas on the road in the area.
Yeah.
Their business model is a little different. I think they've had to make exceptions, especially as they started to encroach into New England, but typically they sell direct, right? Like most other cars, you have to, it's in a lot of places it's actually legislated, and that's I think why Tesla had to change this. But if I want a Chevy, I don't buy a Chevy from Chevrolet. I go to a dealer, and the dealer gets it from invoice prices from Chevrolet, and they have all these archaic
let me go agreements. Talk to my manager, see if I can get a better price.
Well, it's a convoluted history of how these agreements came to be, and they kind of make sense because, you know, Chevrolet back in the day and Ford and all these other companies that fell in line, they couldn't afford to sell the product, so they had to have a middleman. But then they had to guarantee, in many cases, like mini monopolies to the dealerships because the dealers are saying, well, I'm buying, granted it's at invoice pricing, but I'm buying, 20 cars from you. And so you got to do something to make to guarantee that you don't go 2 miles down from my dealership and give, Rob 20 cars at 5% off because for sure I'm going to go out of business with that small difference in margins. I'll go out of business. So historically, all these weird laws have come up and propped up throughout the country. But Tesla, by selling direct, because they're a relatively new car company and they can build that infrastructure out in this modern era, some people would argue that they have unfair advantage because it's a different business model. But
just FYI, there's like 400 charging stations in Connecticut.
Really?
Yeah. From are those Tesla owned or
no? There are different ones.
Yeah, there are different types, but so I don't know what the
Even
distinctions
then,
are
in
between
general,
level.
I don't know. I
level one, two, and whatever. But just throwing that out there.
So the other thing, that Tesla is doing is that big battery factory, and they have partnerships with what is it called, Solar City.
Yeah, and Elon.
Yeah, and he's talked about this about 5 or 3 years ago. When he was saying, our real strategy is to make batteries, to make rechargeable batteries that hold energy, and so you can make energy with wind power, you can make energy with solar power, whatever, but you're always going to have energy when you want it because we're going to make really good batteries that are cheap and efficient.
That's one of the biggest problems to solve in renewable energy is how do you store it? You don't want to be stuck on only having that. They released that battery, which looked nice. I know even when Tesla, I think their original idea, which I feel like was a smarter idea if it worked. It sounds like it doesn't work, but instead of having charging stations, they would literally just swap out your battery because that would be a relatively quick fix. But the thing is, I think it's very expensive and it doesn't work out that well, so they haven't gone that route.
Expensive to build the stations. It's not expensive for them to swap out the battery because they're just recycling the batteries. They're charging them up. They're not damaged or anything.
That's what
like
I meant.
That.
So they still, and it's funny, even related to more infrastructure issues, if they do make a cheaper car, like a $30,000 car, they might have to, that's more mass market. They have to think about if they can keep selling direct or if they have to build things. I would prefer a Tesla app where I can just buy a couple, just, line up. buy.
This is a dumb question, but do you pay when you go to these charging stations?
I think they're free.
Some places are free, actually. And other places, they do charge you. Yeah.
I think Tesla changed theirs to being free. Don't quote me on this, but I think that was one of the things they announced, too.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting point because it is, I would assume, is a decent amount of electricity. And the other thing I just had to mention, which is totally unimportant, but I had to. On their Model S and this, they have a ludicrous mode. Basically, it was a firmware update that made the car even faster and things like that. And it shows kind of the levity they have towards the company where they just kind of joke around. So yeah. One thing they said, they also are the only car company with a true HEPA filter. So I guess the air quality is incredibly good. And so apparently there's like a bioterrorism attack mode.
Yeah.
And that's their joke. Like if a bioterrorism attack nuclear happens,
disaster mode,
yeah, you can just jump in the car and it'll filter out all the things. Yeah. And so it's funny how unseriously, how silly they are about it.
So you're saying that update is $40,000?
I believe so for the Model S.
It's ridiculous to me that they're literally doing nothing other than the programming and engineering that went into it ahead of time. But
that's
just
nothing?
Like, no. R&D, but I'm saying you're not actually buying new physical materials or anything like
You're buying software. Do you not pay for software?
No, it's crazy though.
It's interesting. $40,000 software
to just turn a switch though. That's crazy.
Well, you really do have to look at it like software. I still remember as kids in high school there was an application called Acid where you could take it and get high. It was a music app, but I remember I pirated it. It was like a $300 program. It was a 4 megabyte program. I mean, maybe it was missing the loops, but it's funny to think $400, it's this tiny program. Yeah. But I mean, that's...
It's got to be one of the most expensive apps now. $40,000.
All right, let's move on. So we're still going to stick around in the technology and software realm today. With the second topic, I wanted to talk about password lockers and really just in general account management. So recently, LastPass, which is a fairly well-known and highly recommended password locker, was purchased by LogMeIn, which is a company that does kind of like VPN access and not VPN access, but remote login access to your device. So I can be on my Chromebook and log into my Mac at home or something like that. So because they do it all through their web browser, and in some places they have apps for some devices they have apps, but I believe you can do it through the web browser, that sort of thing. So I can even from my phone log into my computer and work the computer from my phone. So anyhow, there's some controversy because LogMeIn is a little more focused on enterprise, and some of their more consumer-based products have not been really as updated, and their customer service is not as friendly. And there's a lot of goodwill towards LastPass, so some people were very concerned that they might take on those bad habits, so to speak. But I didn't want to talk too much about that. Really, I want to talk about the concept of password lockers. Are you guys? I know the answer, but are you guys using
password? I am. Actually, you don't know about this, but there's a little locker, like high school style locker, that I open up and I write down all my passwords. And
all
put
the
it in
two
there.
Passwords. Yeah. Yes.
Don't tell people this. They're going to hack my stuff.
Ish, but keep going.
So I want to talk about password lockers and then just account management. So how do you keep track of all your accounts, or do you just have one account? How do you keep track of what you do online?
Well, because most of these sites, as Josiah pointed out already, I have a combination of two base passwords and other combinations that append to that.
The unwind and roll to hit.
Yes. So, and I have two email addresses, I think, that I do all of my password related things to. So that's how you hack
his email addresses are his password. Yeah. So that's how he remembers it. So wait,
I just switched the two. Yeah.
Before we get into it, can I just say passwords are one of the most important things now in our digital life, but maybe this is another topic onto itself. So I don't want to talk about this too much, but like there needs to be some change to passwords. I think this is one
Windows
very,
hello.
Well, a lot of people are doing different things like that because you realize how different password requirements are from system to system. At work, there's like 8 different things I have to log into, and they all have different password requirements based on what system, what IT group, and they don't necessarily follow a set of guidelines. Some of them don't make sense, like this isn't necessarily more secure. But so this kind of stuff is great because you don't have to remember your passwords. And so this is something, I'm not using a password manager right now, to a degree. And the reason why I say that is Josiah and I talked about this a while back. And the reason why is because I needed to do this. I ended up just using the Chrome password Saver. As you said, so it encrypts in the cloud. However, it does save it in plain text on your computer, which is whatever. But their argument is if they can get into your computer, they can get other stuff anyway or something to that degree.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, the reason why I just stuck with the Chrome one is because, A, it's free. And at the time, I believe LastPass, you had to pay to use it on mobile, which is probably one of the most important places to use it. But the other reason is the vast majority of time, if I'm using passwords, it's really just on websites. Now with apps, it varies. Although now that I have an iPhone with Touch ID, that makes it a little more interesting. I like using Touch ID a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm not currently using a password manager, and I don't know what would make me want to use it. I think there still are apps that I log into, but for the most part, it's more the websites that cause me problems because I usually log in and out of websites, whereas apps usually remember. Yeah,
but browsers usually store your password anyway.
Well, you have to choose.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm saying,
and the reason why it's important with Chrome is because, so for example, Rob, you use a Windows phone. Chrome isn't on there. So imagine if you're on your PC, it saves it, and then you go onto your phone and it's different. I like with Chrome, I can use it on iOS, Android. It's probably the most cross-platform browser.
So is that a security thing or a convenience thing? And so let me clarify. Are you actually using different passwords per site?
No. I mean, I have, like everybody, have a set of passwords. So no, I don't have a different password per site. But it's an interesting point because I assume what you're getting at is since I'm saving the passwords, I essentially could because it's remembering it, so I don't have to worry about doing that. But I'm stupid, and so I keep the same password. It's all SeanThomasIsTheCoolest.com. That's the password.
Like how you're looking right at me when you said this.
But no, I don't. It's more for convenience. And like I said, the reason why I use the Chrome one over anything else.
Can I buy that domain?
You should. I'd be surprised if, well, I don't know.
Go ahead, keep talking.
And so I'm not suggesting that I'm smarter than the other two people at the table here.
But he knows it.
Implied.
And I'm not saying that I'm... the main reason I do this is because I've been hacked several times. Like, not me personally, but...
Pretty much everyone has.
Like, you know, I've had 2 credit cards that had to be reissued.
Yep. Yeah.
I've had...
health.
Yeah.
Healthcare provider.
Healthcare
hacked.
Provider. But I've actually had websites, you know, send me notifications. Websites. So say, hey, our database was accessed, blah, blah, blah. You might
want to
change
your
password.
Pretty much that happens to me like every month.
It really does. Like,
what was it?
It's insane.
One I just got.
Home Depot, Target, Aetna, like it's just everything. And
this just happened to me last week. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't, you know, I don't want to have the same password for every site. And so then you could say, well, for a while I was coming up with an algorithm that would, you know, based on a root password and then something about the site and something personal, blah, blah, blah. Do this algorithm and I'd come up with the password for that site.
Yeah.
And that worked for a long time. But then when one of those sites got hacked, then I had to change the algorithm slightly just for that one site that got hacked.
See, yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
it totally broke down after that. And
stupid hackers.
So that's the main reason I use a password manager.
You know, it's funny. I really don't have a reason. I like, it's just something I just never bothered to set up.
And
like, I really don't have a reason not to.
And a lot
you know,
of people
I pay for it, but I'm pretty sure it's $20 a year.
Which, yeah,
so
amounts to not very much.
We can afford $20 a year, most people.
Yeah, especially for A the security, and
I mean,
B, all the headache that it saves just having to change your password all the time anyway.
Yeah, I think... having not to deal with that, it's actually a funny side note. My sister always forgets her passwords. And so recently she wanted to see if she could use my Amazon Prime Video. And I don't mind sharing it. Like, I don't really care if you want to use it. But the thing is, then I'd have to give her my password.
You're not using my account, are you?
So I had to give my password. I'm like... I think Amazon has my quote good password, which is ridiculous in itself. But I was like, she always forgets her password. I don't want it being reset. I consulted with my mom and she's like, yeah, don't give her your password. She's going to have it reset. And I kid you not, I later found out, you know, with Amazon Prime, you can share it with family members. I tried to do that. She could not remember her password.
Yep.
She ended up resetting it anyway.
Yep.
This is like one of those things where having the thing that remembers your password, the only major downside to it is the moment that you clear something or you're using a different browser or something like that that doesn't remember it or something like that, you have to remember your password, and that can be difficult.
Yeah, and I come across that all the time at work, right? Mm-hmm. So I do, it's not my job, but I do a lot of tech support at work. And, you know, it happens all the time. And I was like, okay, well, you just need to change this setting, this setting, this setting, and just type in your password here. Oh, I don't remember my password. I always save it. I'm like, well, that's not helpful. I mean, that's part of our modern life. Yeah. As you started the conversation with, you have several passwords that you need to remember, accounts and passwords that you need to remember for work. And that's, you know, it's not great. You're kind of waiting for somebody to make that one ring to rule them all and have the convenience of it. But until we get to that point, and I guess I'm making the case that password managers or lockers are that for at least right now until we can figure out better alternatives to an actual password. But, you know, that's just part of being in a modern world. And I have a lot of pushback. Again, I'm in education. So a lot of teachers will say, oh, well, the kids can't remember the passwords. I'm like, well, you need to help them remember the passwords. So I talk to them about...
battery staple?
Yeah. Staple sauce, fish face, something or other, and you come up with a crazy long password with random words or something like that. And that's what I was referring to earlier. You know, that works until one of your sites get hacked.
So, that's the reason why I love Touch ID so much on the iPhone.
Yeah.
And Windows Hello is the same thing. Like, just, you know, biological ways of logging into systems is really appealing, I think. Universally, because you don't have to remember the passwords anymore.
Well, I mean,
harder to hack.
It's convenient and it's slightly secure, but I mean, it's, you know,
there are
somebody can lift your fingerprints and you can't change them.
So that's.
But they can't lift my eyeball, can they?
No, not as easily. But I mean,
Windows Hello, baby, no, for the win.
Stop and think about what you're saying, Rob. If
you're gonna take my eye,
I'm gonna get if your laptop just to use your phone.
If you open up your laptop and you're sitting 2 feet away from it, and it can scan your retina. While you're wearing glasses, then let me just say, hey, Rob, let's take a selfie, and I scan your retina while I take your selfie.
What? How are you going to scan my... How are you going to do that?
A custom app or something.
I'm saying that could happen very easily. If you're using technology that can scan your retina from 2 feet away in normal lighting conditions while you're wearing glasses, who's to say that
some... Well, hold on. Take a step back. I'm not that important where somebody's going to hijack me.
No, not you.
Scan my retina.
I'm saying they don't have to hijack you at all.
Yeah, they do. How else will they get it?
I'm saying the technology exists. If I can fit a camera that can scan your retina in a laptop,
sure.
Then I can sit in front of my laptop and say, hey, Rob, come over here and let's take a selfie. And my laptop, instead of actually taking a selfie, is scanning your retina.
Okay, so
now I have your retina, and I can use that to log in.
How?
I can use... What do you mean, how? It's a digital file. I can use that digital file as your password to log into your computer.
All I'm saying, I think that's a lot more secure than passwords, traditional passwords.
I think it's a lot more secure right now.
It's a lot more difficult to hack, even if, like... You don't have to have me sitting next to you to hack my password, right?
Correct.
Whereas all the stuff you just described...
I have come into physical contact with you potentially.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
But yeah, and we don't know how it would be secured differently. I guess what you're getting at is, you know, you hear all the time about IT admins who leave all their passwords in plain text on a computer, whereas... biometric data, I would hope, would be more complicated. And one thing I should quickly say, Microsoft's system is a little more complex than that. I believe it uses like bone structure and things like that. Still doesn't mean it's impenetrable, but they use a lot of different factors to make it more accurate and also, I mean, I would assume.
So what I'm saying is that I think, from what I understand, that's a lot harder to replicate than just text passwords, text and alphanumeric passwords.
Yes.
So for the normal person who just gets
right
hacked,
now.
Yeah.
But I would agree, though, one thing, though, yeah, if the technology exists, one problem with biometric analysis or whatever is that you can't change that. So if you get hacked, like, you can change your password, obviously. You can't change anything. But I do agree,
I can't change things
right now.
Yet. I'm slowly going to become a cyborg.
Yeah, that's true. Put on Google Glass and it just attaches to your eye. That's actually what the next Google Glass is. It's literally a glass eye.
It's a glass eye. You have to rip out your real eye putting a glass eye. Kind of sucks, but it's cool.
I was going to say one other thing, but... and, you know, every single conversation on passwords always has to have at some point... of reference. For those of you, basically no one who hasn't read it, There's an XKCD comic on passwords that everyone has ever seen. Google it if you haven't. You probably don't exist because everyone has.
Yeah, it's good. I've used it in trainings before, and basically teachers have not seen it before. So
which password manager, like, what are the pros and cons of the ones you've used?
I use Dashlane, which I misquoted the price. It's now $40 a year. I think it used to be a little bit cheaper.
I think it was $20.
I think
my eyeball is free.
It was me. Great, Rob. Keep that eyeball.
The sass. Keep going.
So I think it was always a little more expensive than LastPass and some of the others, but I don't remember it being 40. I think they probably raised
I think you're last year.
So anyhow, it has some. It actually does have more features than some of the others. So it autofills my contact information, and I can have several profiles. So I can say autofill my work information, or autofill my home information, or autofill even my brother if I want to like mail him some stuff or whatever. It allows you to store receipts from all your purchases in a encrypted blocker if you wanted to.
Does it pull it from somewhere, or do you have to actually put them in?
So every time I make a purchase, a little dialog box comes up, and it shows me, you spent this much at this.
Oh, nice.
It's very similar to something that you'd have in Mint or your bank account, and it says, this was the vendor, and this is how much you spent, blah, blah, blah. Do you want to save it?
That's cool.
And you can edit it at that time if you want.
I guess I want to ask, what's the logic behind that? Why would you
use
that?
It's just keeping receipts for you, but it's something that you'd want to keep secure, potentially.
Oh, okay. Because I guess I just didn't get, why Dashlane would provide that versus... Mm-hmm.
So it also has what they call a wallet, so you can put in, encrypted... it can encrypt personal information beyond what you need for an auto form, so your social security number. It can even do credit cards and debit card numbers. And so it has an added level of security. So every time I use my credit card, it says, okay, type your master password. Whereas the other stuff, I can log in once, and then as long as it's open, it'll just pull my passwords in automatically.
So
I'm not done.
Okay.
So it has an integration with, since iOS 8, so on mobile, in Safari browser, I can click the share button and then swipe over and click the Dashlane button and it'll autofill. Because it used to be on mobile devices, you had to use the app's browser. So I had to go to Dashlane to the website. Idea. But now they have the plugin since iOS 8. And it's pretty good. Last couple things, I can, for many different websites based on how they integrate, I can, from the app, without going to the website, I can just say, change my password, and it'll automatically change my password and sync to the website.
I've seen that, which is cool, because that happens. I mean, it totally happens.
So, related to that, they'll give you a security rating, and so they'll say, this site was recently hacked, you should change your password, so your security rating drops to 80%, and they'll say, these are relatively simple passwords. If there were stuff that I was using based on the algorithm, and it says, this is a simple password, do you want to change it? So click, yes, done. It also has a way for me to share passwords, so I can send you a password, a link, that'll let you log into my stuff, and I can say, let Sean log into my stuff for the next 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
And you don't actually know what the password is.
That's crazy.
Last thing, you can set a, basically like a, what do you call it, like a will. So I can set something up so that if I die, my brother can log into all my stuff.
Huh.
How does it know if you died?
I'd give him some passphrase and whatever, and if I don't log in for a certain amount of time or whatever, it's almost like a dead man switch.
Does any password locker been hacked before?
Not to my knowledge, no. And so the other thing about them getting hacked is, they do 256 bit encryption, blah, blah, blah. And do I know enough about it to say with 100%? I've read reviews of different services, and, this is...
But it's always possible. I mean, I think it's more, I would assume the size. I mean, RSA has been hacked, and they are the de facto security for enterprise. And so it's really... the level of importance. I assume if Dashlane becomes, you know, say everyone they were integrated on every iPhone, then they become a much bigger target. So then,
yeah.
And so one quick question, is there any integration with Touch ID? Like, is there any way you could say, don't autofill, ask me to do Touch ID or something like that, and then it'll fill? Or
Not yet. And I think that's an operating system thing. So I can use Touch ID in place of my master password, and then it resets like every 2 weeks.
Okay.
Right. So when I open the Dashlane app, I have to type in my master password. That's on the desktop and on the phone as well. But, you know, if I use a lot of special characters, it's harder to do on the phone.
Yes, so, that, okay.
So yeah. I can log in once and then say for the next roughly 2 weeks, I can just use my fingerprint to log
in. Okay. It'll be interesting, too, because, you know, Microsoft has the Hello, and Android and Marshmallow is adding a fingerprint reader. So, this is becoming more, biometrics is becoming more common. But as you said, it's definitely not a perfect solution security-wise, but... I wonder if they'll start adding more of that integration. And Android, it might be a little easier to add stuff just because it's more, quote, open. And we'll see if they add stuff like that. But
yeah. So account management, we haven't figured it out yet. Clearly there's different solutions. And you have to balance it with what are the actual chances of you getting hacked and somebody logging into your tiny little account if you're not a big target. I get all that. But like I said, I've had... my accounts, not just accounts, and then also personal information through, you know, like the health insurance hack and stuff like that. So even Experian, actually, which is a credit rating company, got hacked right after I bought my iPhone through T-Mobile, and I had to do a credit check.
So. I mean, it's almost a joke. Like, I mean, all three of us have had situations like that, multiple. I had Target.
Most people have. Yeah.
Yeah, I've had free credit review for the last 3 years, and I just re-upped for another 2 years because of this T-Mobile experience.
Yeah, I forgot to sign up for one of those things when Target got hacked. But yeah,
cool.
All right, so let's move on to the change up, which is brought to you by Green Man Gaming. You can get 20% off the latest games by going to the Commentist website and clicking on the banner for Green Man Gaming. So the change up for the week is, what apps are you currently using? Or I guess, what have you been using the most? That's not something we've talked about on a regular basis, like Marvel Puzzle Quest.
I didn't say it.
So I've been using Feedly. I should say I'm relatively new to RSS readers. I don't know why. There's like five websites I usually go to, and I got into the habit of just cycling through them, even on mobile devices. And so I've only recently gotten into RSS readers. And I think, Josiah, I think you turned me on to Feedly.
I did.
So I like it. There are a few weird quirks, though. For example, some of the articles won't have... I think it's how you set it up on the website, how the website is set up, but a lot of articles will just get cut off after the first paragraph, so I'll have to actually go to the website.
Oh, anyway.
But that's been pretty good. I will also say Walking Dead also just put out a new game where it's like this turn-based... you ever play Hitman Go?
No, but I heard it's
kind of cool. So it's kind of turn-based in that sense. So anyway, that's what I've been using.
Which side note, I've heard that Fallout Shelter is actually making a lot. Yeah, apparently it's making them a lot of money.
Yeah.
And rumor is they're actually canceling Fallout 4 and they're just going mobile. Konami's going pachinko.
Yeah.
Only, and it's. But yeah,
I also have all of the dating apps, all of them.
All of them.
Every single one that exists on iOS is on my phone.
And right how now. Many dates have you been on this month?
Not relevant to this.
Sean?
So I just recently got this iPhone, so I don't have too many unique apps yet. I have the regular ones that I always use, like Snapchat, Imgur, and stuff like that. But I think I still really want to dig because, you know, iOS is considered to have the best apps overall. But one app that I've been liking a lot, I love podcasts, so I used Overcast.
Just went free.
Yeah, he recently took away the paid option. You can still donate and stuff to him. Some things are different than I'm used to, which actually they changed with the premium, but normally you have to download the entire thing and you have to do it over Wi-Fi. But it's a really well-designed app. It looks nice. He has a lot of little features. Like, obviously you can speed it up, but he has ways of cutting out silence and things like that. It's just a good app. And now that it's completely free, I mean, it's even more alluring.
Marco, it's free, and he added streaming, right? So you had to download, and if you paid, I don't know why this was a bonus, but when you paid for the app, which I did a while ago, it let you download over cellular.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's still download, so you're still downloading a big file. But with streaming, it's compressed, so you know it's not as big of a file. So,
well, having the cell streaming is just important because sometimes you just don't have Wi-Fi. Like, yeah. Actually, right now at work, I don't have Wi-Fi where my desk is, so because I just plug in directly. And because of that, it's nice to be able to stream over Wi-Fi. Yeah. I have to use the podcast app.
Are there any apps that you, since you recently got an iPhone for the first time, that you were like, oh my God, I'm so excited now I have an iPhone?
No, definitely not. All the apps I've gotten so far are all on Android as well, but that's probably partially in part due to the fact that I just got this.
Right. That's all he knows, man. That's all he knows.
Well, yeah, you're already used.
But I will say, like, the parity is certainly mostly there. I mean, I'm sure there are some apps I'm thinking of.
Do you find that apps on the iPhone are better than the Android?
It definitely depends for actually odd reasons. And it has more, like, for example, the Google Play Music app, because of the way it is. Well, but it's not even, I mean, Google makes good apps for the iPhone, but because
all
of the
Microsoft's
way,
apps are better on other devices.
Yeah. But it's just the way that Android works, getting over to the swipe over the hamburger menu is easier on Android than on the iPhone. So that really annoys me a lot. Generally, there's something about iPhones that they're smoother and they transition well, but none of them have been... I don't think any of them have felt that much better. They do all, though, feel a little bit nicer, but none of them have felt like, wow, this has all the features that I wanted. And I will say one thing, there are definitely things I'm seeing about how iOS being closed off prevents me. For example, I use Last.fm to record all the music I'm listening to, and you can't do that on the iPhone unless you're listening through iTunes Music. If you're using any other service, you can't record the music you're listening to. So little things like that I'm finding. But anyway.
Interesting. I'll throw out two apps. First one, really quickly.
They're both Marvel Puzzle Quest.
Jeez, come on, guys. Road Trip is an app that I use to write down all my, record all my car-related data. So anytime I take it in for a service, I just had to take my car in for its first oil change. So I wrote that in there. And then every time I gas up, I put my mileage
in
there.
That's cool.
And so I can keep track of my mileage, how much money I've spent on my car for repair and maintenance, and then also how much I spend in gas. I've said before, I've got like roughly a 60 to 65 mile commute one way. so I do about 600 miles on my car every week, between 500 and 600 miles every week, depending on what I'm doing on the weekend and stuff. So, yeah, keep track of all that, all the money I'm throwing away and all the carbon that I'm putting into the environment. And then another one that I use is called Launcher, or really Launcher Pro, because I actually paid for it. But so they've got the free version and then the Pro version that you can buy outright or use in-app purchasing. So Apple apps have kind of gotten around no free versions by doing the app and then in-app purchases to unlock features. So Launcher, it kind of came on the scene with iOS 8, where you could swipe down from the top of the screen and you'd have widgets. And so Launcher lets you create a widget that basically has shortcuts to apps or shortcuts to things inside of apps. Mm-hmm. So I can have a shortcut to call my mom. And just so swipe down, get the today screen, and right there it's a widget and I just tap on it and calls my mom. Or I can have a widget... an icon that goes into a certain location in my settings. Like I use a VPN sometimes. So I click on that and it takes me straight to the VPN settings in system settings. I can have it play specific playlists, that sort of thing. What are you smiling at me?
Sounds like you might like Android.
Yeah, well.
it's one of those things that, this will
no, say I know that's thing. A baked-in part of Android. And
if you guys switch phones, it's going to blow. Like, my head will explode. I won't know what to do with myself.
So, but that is cool.
So the neat thing about it, so I used to just hide the app, right? Like, I buried it in a folder because the main point of it was set it up once or a couple times as you go along. And then you just swipe down and get to the get to the launcher piece in the widget area in the Today screen. But now that I have the iPhone 6S, two things happening. One, the phone is a lot bigger, so it's harder for me to swipe from the top. And then secondly, because of the 3D touch feature, they now changed the app so you can 3D hard press on the app icon and the and a quick menu pops up from the app. So I don't have to swipe down from the top. I can put the app icon on my home screen, take it out of that buried folder, hard press on it, and I get those shortcuts too.
I mean, whenever I hear these cool features that companies add, my heart always breaks for all those app developers who had the idea or something before. Yeah. Well, and
that's been happening.
Sometimes they just buy an app and then integrate it into it. Like Microsoft has been doing this a lot.
I mean, that's what Siri was. Siri was a separate app.
I mean, Microsoft just bought, I think, two or three different calendar apps, and I think they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Acompli is they've already integrated it. Outlook app on your iPhone is Acompli.
So let's move on to our last topic of the day. I wanted to talk a little bit about Facebook and the recent news in the past week or so related to Facebook. I could have sworn we talked about this on the show recently, but maybe I'm just making this up. But you know, there's all these big companies who start with one thing that's very specific, and then they blow up, and then they expand to all these other markets that are sometimes just not related. Like Google is a perfect example of this, right? So now they're making hardware, like, you know, all this Google Glass and stuff like this. So Facebook, you know, obviously started as a social network, and it its earlier purchases, like Instagram, for example, it was along those same trends. And then recently you've been seeing this move away towards into other markets, I guess you can say. So Oculus is a good example. So they bought Oculus, which is, you know, maybe they're making a social network virtual reality. I don't know. But, you know, clearly they're thinking outside of what they originally created.
Did they buy Maxis, who makes The Sims, and did they buy Second Life creators?
Yeah. So Facebook's been in the news a few times in the last couple of weeks. They're integrating a lot of new features into their website. Or I guess testing. I don't know if I don't think they're.
Yeah, a lot of these are in testing.
So I'll name off a few of them. So there's a new shopping aspect where, from what I understand, instead of just clicking on an ad and going straight to a website, you have an ad within Facebook itself where you can actually look at products and then maybe purchase through them. I don't.
Yeah, I think that's the idea. And so it's almost like Amazon. So Amazon, a lot of stuff that Amazon sells isn't actually being sold by Amazon. It's just through the Amazon Marketplace, but they complete the sale because they have shipping, and more importantly, they have my credit card and address.
Yeah,
and so it makes it seamless. So from that sense, it's very similar to Amazon, except it's just on a social network. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they would capture you'd type in your credit card information, and for a long time, you've actually been able to send people money.
Yeah.
In Facebook Messenger, if they already have your debit card information.
So another piece of this is a new news headline notification service. So, you know, they've had news on the side for a while now, and I think now you'll be able to actually follow specific channels. Like if I wanted to follow The Verge or something like that, and then you get notifications on your phone, on your mobile device, for headlines from that channel.
Right.
Which obviously is competing with a whole range of other apps that are already existing right now.
It is, but you know, you look at how many people consume most of their news and things on Facebook.
Yeah.
In a way, they're not competing. I mean, they are, but they're really the behemoth that everybody wants to connect to Facebook and put their stuff on Facebook. So.
Well, related to that, so not just the notification piece, and I think you're going to talk about this, but they've been caching, mm-hmm. pre-caching pages, and most of those partnerships are with content providers, namely news sites like the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, that sort of thing. So that, especially on mobile, when you click on that link, it just automatically pops up. There's almost no wait time because they've already loaded it as part of your feed in the background. So, you know, it means more data if you're on cellular networks, but it also means faster load times.
They actually announced the other day that they are the internet now. They pre-cached the internet.
Well, internet.org, so clearly.
And then the other platform they're introducing is a more robust video feature where it sounds like it's going to be more of a YouTube competitor in that you know, they, you can curate videos. Not only can you publish videos, which you've been able to do before, but you've also, there's now this ability to find other videos, have videos suggested to you, have playlists set up, things like that.
Yeah, I think they want to emulate that concept of, you know, you go to YouTube because somebody sends you a link and then it shows you related videos, and sometimes they're related and sometimes they're not.
And 4 hours later, you're like, oh, I hate myself.
That's Sunday morning. Is it's like I wake up, I play League or Heroes of the Storm, and then I take a break to eat cereal, and while I'm eating cereal, I check out one cat video that turns into 40 minutes of cat videos.
Grumpy cat.
I love it.
So what do you guys think about this?
You missed one. The emoji.
Oh, right.
They're expanding the like button. So they're doing a test in Spain and in Ireland. So that when you click that like button and hold it or tap and hold, it expands into a list of emoji like sad. You know, so if I say, hey, my grandmother just died, you don't want to thumbs up that.
Yeah, exactly.
But you can say, you
don't like it. Yeah.
You know, if you're too lazy and not a good enough friend to leave a real comment, you can just click the sad emoji.
Right, so I'll have 20 sad faces around my grandma dying.
Well, and it makes sense because they had to get around the fact that upvotes don't always work for everything, but adding downvotes is a really tricky path.
Right.
So this made more sense where it's more emotional based. Just a quick thing. Did I ever tell you about that story I read online where somebody's mom thought LOL stood for lots of love, so they text their kid, grandma died, LOL.
Oh, God.
Oh no!
Oh, that's bad. So anyway, what do you guys think about this? You know, Facebook is, you know, obviously a behemoth now in this space, and clearly they're going to look for other ways to keep growing.
Yeah,
and keep growing into, you know, growing into other markets as well.
I think it's impressive because you hear about the Clay Christensen's concept of you know, the innovator's dilemma, right? So this idea that a new company comes in, disrupt stuff by doing something very differently, and because of that, you know, old model shut down, and then they're on top, and then 10 years later somebody new comes in.
Right.
So you could argue that Facebook is one of those innovators, and maybe they haven't hit their prime yet. They're not like at that stage where Microsoft was an innovator in the 80s, and then in the mid 90s to mid-2000s, they just kind of rested on their laurels, and now they're getting shaken up, and with the tail end of Ballmer and Satya Nadella is seemingly trying to rise to the occasion. It seems like to me, with all these moves that Facebook is making, is that they don't ever want to rest on the laurels, at least not right now.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that you can do. You can kind of stay hungry as long as you have your founder as a CEO or lead of the company. It's relatively easier to do that, which might be related to why Jack Dorsey is back at Twitter.
Yeah.
But a lot of these moves are very aggressive towards other companies. They're either doing things to shore up their core marketplace, or they're aggressively attacking other companies. So the page caching thing, I mean, Google announced their initiative called AMP, to compete with that. And I, you know, you could argue that it was code discovery and maybe Facebook came at it with it a couple months earlier or a couple weeks earlier, and they both were going to get there. But like I said, they're just being aggressive.
Do you think the video platform is a threat to YouTube and other existing platforms right now?
You know, it's devil's in the details, because there were a lot of competing video companies out there when YouTube was coming into its continuing reign, and those other companies have fallen by the wayside. So it's a little bit of community and luck and happenstance, and then also what's in the secret sauce and how's the delivery work, right? So devil will be in the details, definitely, but with a billion plus users, anything can be a hit.
Yeah.
Well, one interesting thing about Facebook versus YouTube is if you're hosting videos, and obviously they're going to figure something out with the video service. You know, as me, I don't know if I would post from my personal Facebook account if this new channel I start, like say we did the commentist, I would want the commentist. Now you can create pages and things for groups,
right?
But it doesn't feel the same as YouTube. So I don't know if there'd be a more focus on people posting personal videos. I think that's what it's been in the past in Facebook. Whereas YouTube feels more like just a general video site that you can put
there. But I mean, that's what YouTube was in the beginning. It was people on webcams, talking about their cats and, you know, talking about how hot it is and all this random BS. And then they started saying, oh, well, maybe I can put things like my home videos on there. And then they started saying, oh, maybe we can produce stuff. And then when they started having ad sharing, that's when we got some really interesting professional level content or prosumer level content. And so Facebook's already learned that lesson from what Google and YouTube had to do, right? So they are actually coming at it by trying to attract top level talent to produce on Facebook, right?
And
I don't think we've gotten our email yet.
Yeah, and a lot of people really, most of their time on the internet is spent on Facebook. So this is a place where they can it's really...
just another excuse to not have to leave Facebook, right? Yeah.
And they learn more about you, and they sell more ads.
Yeah.
And I want to get back quickly to what you asked earlier where, you know, so you're right. Like, basically every tech company right now, I feel, their aim is to never become obsolete. They always want to be on the edge. Where it's funny because there are some differences with past companies. You even think about Microsoft. I think pre-Nadella, when it was Ballmer, I think they wanted to just make sure they kept making money.
Yeah.
They didn't, I mean, they were enterprise. They didn't care as much that they were the coolest company around. They just wanted to keep making money. So this is very much, I feel like, a new startup feeling way that even big companies feel like startups. But one interesting thing I want to point out about Facebook is, at least with their big brands, they're leaving them alone in that. So for example, Instagram, it's still the Instagram app. It's not part of the Facebook app.
Right.
The Messenger app, it's not part of the Facebook app. WhatsApp, it's not part of the Facebook app, although they might integrate it with Messenger. I don't know what they're going to do. But they're, from a Facebook branding perspective, it might be bad. But they're still, it seems like they're keeping a lot of their brands separate, which is companies, you know, decide one way or another. Like we were talking earlier about Microsoft buying Acompli. That's Outlook now. Nobody will ever know what Acompli is anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Google bought, not Mailbox, they bought one of the best mail apps on iOS.
Yeah, I forget what it was, but yeah.
But it's so funny. I mean, now we'll honestly never know who they are anymore because now it's the Gmail app. So my point is they're keeping it separate. And it was smart because while there was, everybody every year claims that Facebook is losing popularity among the young kids, there is some feeling of that. Like people have definitely gone over to Snapchat and things like that, Periscope. You know, they're all Yik Yak, things like that. By keeping these apps separate, I think it's a smart way to stay relevant and expand. And it seems like most of their buys have worked out well. I think WhatsApp still has relevance.
Yeah, it's interesting. And they keep experimenting. So there's no guarantee that any of these will be a runaway hit. They've had a lot of failed apps. They've had, was it Facebook Pages? Page? Nobody uses that anymore. And they had Poke, the Poke app, and they had the separate group app.
Yeah, and I think Poke was like a Snapchat app, wasn't it?
Kinda.
Was Pages supposed to be a blog?
No, it was your feed, but it was they displayed it in a more visual way.
I'm surprised they haven't gotten to blog service yet. I mean, that would seem like a
natural progression. Yeah, I mean, they'll probably be chasing Medium soon. So
and wait, and don't forget, they made a phone, which was super poorly, but they made it. And I think they, I don't know if they still have the Facebook launcher or the Android launcher replacement. I think it's like Facebook Home, but yeah.
So what the other interesting thing about this is that a lot of these services have come out in like the last two, haven't come out, but have been released to the news and announced in the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, you know, it's typically been a slower rollout of new features. Yeah. Like we're going to try this feature, we'll launch it, see how it goes, and then we'll try the next one.
Remember when the news feed came out and everybody flipped out? I'm never using Facebook again.
Yeah. This happens every year. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's another perfect example. When they changed the news feed, they were chasing Twitter, right? And so they just keep doing this. And, you know, that buy button, that they're chasing Twitter, you know? Before Twitter has even established the buy button, they've heard that Twitter's testing this and they're like, okay, we can throw our weight around.
Yep.
Twitter's got 300 million, we've got 1.3 billion, right? So screw them. And we'll see who ends up on top.
Nice. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. All right, and that will do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to us on the iTunes and Stitcher. You can also check out some other videos that we created on YouTube by searching for The Commentist. Please share us with your friends, leave us some comments, rate us, subscribe to us, and you can submit questions and topics to us directly by going to theunwind.audio. And if you want more of us and our beautiful voices, you can check out our D&D podcast called Roll to Hit, and we'll see you next week.
Please never pronounce it Fache book again. Just totally wrong.